Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. And hi, I'm Paul. I'll be your host this evening. As you know what, it's no rest for the wicked, because even though we have come to the end of a long old season, we're already looking forward to next season. So yes, lots to talk about this evening as the All Blacks and the international season comes to a close. Well, we do have a couple of Barbarians games this weekend. And we'll also have a chat about the Super Rugby squads that came out as well. Plus anything else you put in the live chat, obviously you can put that in there in Facebook or on YouTube, the search for New Zealand Sport Radio on there. Joining me this evening, it's Con. How are you doing, sir?
Very good, thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
And yes, so look, folks, one of the big topics that we've had over the last week or so clearly has been Razzie's ban from rugby, all rugby for 2 months, and then from match day activities for a year. Myself and Connor did a For Your Ears Only 45-minute discussion about that last on Friday, was it? We did it? I think it was. I think it was on Friday. Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday morning, maybe, actually.
Yes, that's right.
So, folks, if you want to have a listen to our views on that, then head over to nzsportradio.com and you can have a watch or a listen to that one. We won't be going into that tonight. So we've done 45 minutes on it already. I don't really think there's much more to say, unless, Con, you've seen something new happen over the past couple of days.
The only thing of note for that is at least one South African great, Nick Mauer, has come out in support of, well, in mild support of the ban. and that must be the first person of note in the entire continent of Africa that has come out against Razzie.
I'm not sure he's come out against Razzie. I think he's come out and said that it's been well thought out, and they've gone through the whole process properly. He didn't follow the process he should have done. Now, whether Razzie was correct or not, he says, is another matter entirely. And he still thinks Razzie was probably correct in most of what he said, but or at least that Nick Berry had a bad game.
Yes.
So I think there's a slight difference, I guess, of saying that World Rugby followed their processes and have done what is correct according to those, as opposed to sort of not supporting Razzie, as it were.
Yeah, no, that's true. I was being a little bit facetious. I mean, it is good to have someone come out, you know, with a little bit of with some balance. You know, I think that that's something that I found a bit disappointing with the media over there. It's been a little bit, I'd say the blind support would be my take on it, and I think just even an admission that or a comment from the media on the fact that the case against him was pretty clear, and the way that they followed the process, as Nick Mallett said, was you know, means that he was probably guilty. It would be great to have someone come out over there and say that, you know, we don't like our key people in rugby, you know, doing that type of activity, considering how, I'd say the thing that I was thinking about over the weekend, just in seeing lots of comments online, was how scathing the South African media and fans were about Gatland's comments when he made them. You know, so to go from being absolutely scathing about his comments, which were minor compared to Razzie's, to then lumping their weight behind Razzie and not going, well, it's an eye for an eye or whatever, is a little bit, I guess, one-eyed, no pun intended. But anyway, I think we've probably talked a bit about that. And if you want to hear more about our views, go where Paul said.
And yeah, don't forget, obviously, the media types was playing to their audience, as you'd expect, that's because true. That's how you pay the bills, is if you advertisers aren't are looking for eyeballs, and if and they're looking for eyeballs. So at the end of the day, go check that out on that one. It's not surprising, as I say, or overly surprising, how the South African media have taken it on. So then, coming to the end of the international season, and look, there seems to be pretty much a agreement amongst New Zealand sort of media and rugby groups that that it's been a failure of a season, and some people have been found it strange that our head coach has been nominated for Coach of the Year by World Rugby in their World Rugby Awards. How do you see the All Blacks season as a whole has gone?
I think with a little bit of time to sort of get over sounds a little bit like I was, you know, mourning, but to kind of evaluate the season after a disappointing weekend followed by another disappointing weekend, I think it is a slight failure. No, actually, probably the better way to describe it is, compared to most countries, it is actually a successful season, but compared to the standards the All Blacks have set in the last 10 years, it is a very poor season. And on balance, considering they're rebuilding everything, I would say it is a marginal failure. You know, not an absolute catastrophe, it's the nature of the losses, I think, that were the most disappointing. I think if the Irish game and the French game were a lot closer on the scoreboard, it would have felt a bit better, but we were comfortably beaten by those teams. If they were a little bit more like the second South African game, which was we could have won that.
So you managed to tiptoe your way around falling into the trap I was setting you, which was, if we look at the Tier 1 nations and their records this year, you can see that New Zealand won more games than anybody else at a win ratio higher or as high as anybody else, with Ireland the only people anywhere near, really. England 10% behind and going backwards below that. Somebody might say, look, how can all the teams bar the last two have over 50% success rate? Because obviously we include the Tier 2 games as well have been included in here. So from that point of view, look, it's kind of interesting that a bad season for New Zealand would be considered by just about any, or by any other nation as being a good season for them. So yeah, funny from that point of view, as to kind of the expectations that the public have.
That's right, Paul. And I think if you were to, it's quite difficult to compare with the Northern Hemisphere, and just what I mean by that is our season doesn't necessarily match up with their season. But if you take, if you compare us to South Africa and Australia, which we probably should compare ourselves against, I think we can safely say that our year was better than Australia's, who got off to a real flyer in the Rugby Championship and then, you know, have really had a hard time of it. And we can talk about that a little bit later. If we, on the other side, compare us to South Africa, and what I would say is that what I tend to see coming out of the Republic is kind of on the slightly on the other side of the fence from us, they are – not raving about their year, but they're generally positive, as opposed to ours as being generally negative, slightly negative, slightly positive. And I think if you exclude the Lions tour for a second, and if you were to compare us with South Africa, I think our years have been quite similar. They lost 2 to Australia and then 1 to us, and then they lost a game to England. The end of year series of the two nations is probably quite similar. We had 4 games, one very easy game, and then one which was on the easy side, which was Wales, and then 2 difficult ones, whereas South Africa had they obviously had a game against Wales as well, and then a probably slightly easier one against Scotland, which didn't come out too easy because Scotland are playing too well, and then a very difficult one against England. So I'd say they're comparable. Considering if we take out the Lions tour where they went 2-1, South Africa lost one more game against top-tier opposition than us. So generally, one could argue that we had a slightly better rate than South Africa. However, I think, us beating either France or Ireland would have meant a marginally successful year, kind of like South Africa. They only lost one game at the end of the year. We lost 2, and that's probably all there is to it.
Yep. A couple of comments in the live chat is that Turner writes, the trend over is what's worrying him as a trend over the last few years. And it's difficult to necessarily have trends when you've had 2 COVID disrupted seasons. So kind of what is there really a trend, or how much is down to that? Craig goes, Paul, our forward play is years behind, in my opinion. Now, I wouldn't say the forward players are years behind, or the forward players are years behind. I would just say that this current, if you listen to Boa, he'll tell you how World Rugby is trying to speed up the ruck and speed up the game. One of the All Blacks head coaches have gone and done this. Okay, so if that's how it's going to be refereed, then this is how we need to play. But as Loxana Wright says, the All Blacks have abandoned the ruck, and that is because how they're expecting it to be played now, expecting it to be refereed, but it's not being refereed that way, other teams are challenging the ruck and being allowed to by the referees, because in which case it's legal, which is all fine, but the All Blacks just haven't adapted to that or responded to that. And that's led them into this situation that they're in, where teams who blitz them and get up in their face really do cause the All Blacks problems, especially when they manage to slow the ball down. The All Blacks try and play the same way, whether they've got quick ball or slow ball, and that just does not work. It works when you've got quick ball. It doesn't when you've got slow ball, because the defence is set. So
works very well against Australia and the Pacific Island teams, probably Japan and the USA, of course. So, excluding the weaker teams, no offence to those teams, such as the Tier 2 nations, I'd say it definitely works against Australia. In a way, France didn't contest the breakdown nearly as much as Ireland did. They didn't disrupt us. And I found that to be interesting. They were playing a slightly faster paced game. They did have us, particularly in the first half in that, but it wasn't nearly as bad as we struggled against South Africa and Ireland, I thought, with regards to just completely blowing that part of the game.
Yep, sorry, folks, if I sort of froze there for a bit. Looks like my connection is a bit up and down tonight. It's been that rush defence. Is you've got to play it. You've basically got to get your forwards over that game line, play at pace, get quick ball, before you go wide. If you try going wide out to the backs and playing off 10 against rush defence, you're in trouble with slow ball, and hence that's part of it. Yeah, also right. Turnovers being a big thing, or interception passes a big thing for Australia this year. It was a problem for them, and that helped obviously New Zealand for that one. And it's basketball star rugby isn't going to cut it at the moment. I think it will. Basketball will cut it if you get quick ball and you get over, and you get your forwards over that game line in the first place. Then you can, but you've got to get that first. Otherwise, it definitely isn't going to work.
The problem is not the basketball style rugby, and this is no disrespect to your comments, Craig, I think I understand what you're saying as far as potentially prioritising that or assuming that that will win the game. I think we did very well this year, including against teams such as France and South Africa and even Ireland, when we at finding space and finding attacking opportunities, particularly counter-attacking opportunities. Not as much as in some previous years, and certainly not as much against Australia. But I think generally we held onto the ball pretty well. Our handling skills were good, and some of those tries that we saw, the try that Ardie Savea scored against South Africa, and Will Jordan try against Ireland were pretty incredible. And I think, sometimes we, in the tries against Ireland, we created something out of nothing. And I think that's something that the All Blacks can do. It is our upfront, our breakdown, scrum, line out that needs to improve to allow us to actually not lose the game in those areas despite our feats of, brilliance that we sometimes have in the back line and in the counter-attack.
So congratulations to France. Definitely deserved to beat.
It was a great match.
To beat New Zealand, the All Blacks. Only the fourth time in history that the All Blacks have lost three games in a calendar year. And we should also remember that this is only the second time in history that the All Blacks have ever played 15 test matches in a year. This is the most test matches they have ever played.
Third time in history.
The more games you play, the more you lose. Sorry?
Only three games in a calendar year. Did you say?
Only the fourth time, yeah.
I
saw them listed. Now, it might be the fourth time in during professional era or something along those sort of lines. I think it's obviously will only be test matches rather than tour matches. But in recent times, at least, it's
the reason I say that is I recall listening to a stat. I wouldn't say it's infamous because I'm not sure how many people know about it, but did you know, Paul? Did you know that there is a day in All Blacks history where we lost twice on the same day?
Yes,
and this is not Sevens All Women's Year. So I don't know the full facts of that, but I'll have a pop and you can correct me. We lost to South Africa over in South Africa, and then our baby Blacks, which we thought were pretty good, also lost to Australia in what was a pretty rare loss to them, and it was in the same calendar day. I wonder if we lost three games that season too, Paul. I'd imagine we might have. And we used to go to South Africa and get bullied, two or three games on tour sometimes when, it was very difficult to win over there.
Yeah, so you're quite right. I think it is in recent memory then on that one.
Because 1998 or 97, we lost four in a row. And then 2009, we lost three to South Africa in one year. Back when they were playing amazingly. So it might be those three in the professional era. 1998, I think it was, when we lost to Bledisloe, and then 2009, and then this year, which is disappointing.
They were always against different teams for three games.
You're saying three different opponents.
Oh, maybe that is it then. But yes, and the Springboks and Australia were in most of those ones. But anyway, the Springboks and France, I think, were involved in nearly all of them every year. Anyway, some comments about Samusoni in the chat. Yeah, I mean, fantastic guy, player who's come through really, really well. Is showing that his style of game at the international level is perfect. Someone who I was on the conference call the Zoom meeting that the Chiefs set up on Monday about their Super Rugby squad, and Clayton let slip that Samusoni had actually turned down offers to go overseas to stick around and fight it out for All Blacks contention. And wow, boy oh boy, what a fantastic call that was by him to do so, because he could very easily be coming. Getting himself into that first Well, he's definitely in the match day 23, in my opinion, first choice. Whether he makes it into the first choice 15, we'll have to wait and see on that one. Let's just run through the rest of the stuff that happened this weekend then. So Italy beat Uruguay, no big surprise there, 17-10. Scotland saw Japan, 29-20.
That was a very close game there, Italy versus Uruguay one, Paul. Very close. Uruguay were on Italy's line 5 minutes after the 80th, three or four minutes after the 80th, threatening to score. And I can't remember if it was a penalty or a knock-on. It was a turnover, actually. And so that would have been a – and it was right in front of the post too. So it could have very easily been a first Uruguay draw, which would have made history. But sorry, continue, mate. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's right. Scotland beat Japan 29 to 20, sorry. Japan's a bit of a tough old Northern Hemisphere tour, haven't they, let's be honest. They beat Portugal but lost to Ireland and Australia. So it's not been a great window for them.
Japan's best effort, though, was on the weekend against Scotland. They've had blowouts, and so that was at least a except against Australia, which was quite close. But this one was at least a respectable, effort. They got a bit close.
Yeah, well, so they had one blowout, which is against Ireland.
A blowout.
It was true. Scotland, though, beat Tonga, beat Australia narrowly, had a good game against Africa, but came up short 15-30 and now beaten Japan. So I think it's a step forward for Scotland in this November window, heading in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Georgia-Fiji, 15-all, a draw in that one. I think Fiji will be disappointed with that. I thought they would beat Georgia, to be honest with you. After a decent game against
they should have beat Wales.
Romania beat Tonga 32-20. Look, that Fiji side, remember, doesn't have the Vern Cotter traveling with them, so it's not like their first choice coaching team, to be honest. Same with Tonga, they're not at full strength because of obviously COVID and travel restrictions. Mm-hmm. England beat South Africa 27-26 in that one, a very tight game there. 18 penalties by England in that game. And I know that we've had some complaints by John suggesting that they should have had more yellow cards. But at the end of the day, if Pollard had been kicking sticks, he'd have won the game, put bluntly, but he just can't kick.
Absolutely. Look, if we could talk about this game, do you want to talk about this game now briefly?
Yeah.
I thought it was a very good game. I actually got up for it. And I was pumping for it, actually, because I was, really looking forward to these two teams are in incredible form. And I think, in spite of the fact that we got hammered by Ireland, I do think the top four teams in the world were playing back-to-back. And you could argue that Ireland should be in there. I think maybe they do, they are. But it was a great game. When the yellow card came out, I was surprised initially because the penalties weren't clustered. When a yellow card usually comes out on the line, two or three infringements, similar penalties, they weren't clustered together. They were tended to be quite stretched out. And so when the yellow card came out and the ref said, too many penalties, I went, oh, shit, has there been that many penalties? I didn't realise while I was watching it just how many penalties England were infringing on. They were quite stretched out. But it was I think England, they didn't go into their shell. They played the game that they needed to against South Africa. They took risks and, that try to, what's his name, Corky? Was a really, was a big reason why they won that game. That was a, great play, cut through, Springboks were targeting, who's the young fella, forget his name.
Marcus Smith,
who had a really solid game. They were targeting him and left this guy open, and it was a great try. It could have been a Springboks win easily. On the other hand, the the penalty at the end was a double penalty because Steyn came flying in and kicked the guy in the head. Well, it looked like that, or he did something like that. I think it was a kick in the head, or kneeled on him.
I would say more knees in the back, in which case, I think he could have easily picked up a yellow card for that one.
Yeah, I was surprised he wasn't, actually. I was surprised he wasn't. But, I mean, it was a done deal by then. So, I mean, maybe the ref just wanted to avoid the problem there. But I did think, it was lenient, LB. I think, though, in context of the game being, as I said before, I do think, so just for the listener, not the viewer, if there's any podcast listeners, LB's just said one yellow and 18 cards is lenient at best, and I agree. Whilst watching, though, I think when the penalties, one yellow for 18 penalties, I'm sure it means when the penalties are spread out, I think it does tend to mean that the yellow cards don't come out as quickly.
They also weren't all in the 22 either. They were quite a long way out.
Interestingly, I think the yellow card when it came out was after a reasonable gap in penalties, and it was in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
You watched the game, obviously, Paul, being a big England supporter.
I did watch it live. I watched the recording. Well, I watched about 50 minutes, and then I watched the highlights to make sure I caught the rest of it on that one, because I was running out of time today before the show. Some new players in there is the Stuart at fullback has had a cracking, I think it's Stuart, introduction to rugby, which I think was or international rugby. So I've been very impressed with him. I think this would probably show the strength of having Henry Slade in the side, because he has got such a long pass off his left hand in particular, but he's got some great passing, which is what opened up the Springboks a couple of times. Was being able to get that ball wide accurately and quickly, even with the rush defence. They're standing in that 12 channel. A shame to see Manu pull up with an injury again.
If you're going to get an injury at the 3 minutes into the game, you do it scoring a try.
Well, true. But it does show that he's played his two games this year that he's allowed to play before his body breaks down. He hasn't been 12 months off.
He looks trim, though, doesn't he? Like, he's got the wing physique, which is really cool, because he's always been a big guy. And when I saw him, I was like, man, I don't like him. Shit, he looks trim.
He was still playing in the centres this weekend. I'm not a fan of him out wide on the whole, but I must admit, I've not seen much of him play recently. Pollard, from South African point of view, looked good. Pollard really let them down, to be honest with you. I can see LB's comment there that Delendi didn't trust Elton Yanchi's defence. I think that's perhaps the one area of weakness in the South African team at the moment is who is their 10. I think that's perhaps the one area that South Africa could have a little do lack depth. Everywhere else on the pitch, they've got some fantastic players and plenty of players to come in as well. But that, to me, they're perhaps their slight Achilles heel at the moment. So England will obviously be happy with their November campaign, having picked up wins over Tonga, Australia, and South Africa to finish up with 7-3 from their year. The Springboks, look, having beaten the All Blacks and got sort of a one all against the All Blacks and picked up the Lions series, you've got to say that the Springboks should be happy with their season. Sure, they've had five losses, but when you think that they lost by just a single point to England, their loss to New Zealand was only by 2 points. Sure, the women's only ran by 2 points as well. That first game against Australia, they lost by 2 points again. So most of their losses have been within a score.
Lot of their wins generally have also been pretty tight as well. I'd say South Africa shouldn't be too disappointed with their effort on England against England. I think LB just said, weren't playing their best. I thought South Africa played pretty well. I do think they missed their points, but you know, I think both teams actually played well. You know, England were missing some players, South Africa also missing some players. So, but over the year, South Africa, I think they should be pleased with the year. I think the win percentage is a bit tough considering the opposition they've played against. They did have a lot of tight wins. You know, there's a parallel universe in which South Africa win 12 of their games, you know, because they, or probably 13, because they just, the games that they lost were, sorry, not 13, 12, 11 or 12 games, because they, the losses were close. On the other hand, you know, tight win against Wales that they very really could have potentially lost, you know, tight loss against tight win against New Zealand, of course. Yeah, they and then the Scotland game was a little bit closer, particularly for 50, 60 minutes. You know, they didn't put them away, I'd say. And then obviously the Lions games were very tight, particularly the third game. So, yeah, they certainly weren't putting them away, but I think overall their season, you know, has been pretty good.
Yep.
Should be pleased.
Yeah, I think they're in a good place. I mean, obviously, Vermeulen's getting on a bit. Can he keep going all the way through every World Cup? I know he's trying to. He was thinking about retiring after the Lions, I think, but got talked out of it. And I say, I think a search on for a number nine, for sorry, for a number 10 is an area that they need to look at.
I don't know enough about the people coming through in South Africa rugby because we just haven't seen them much this year. But I'd imagine that the drop-off in retiring or departing players after the coming World Cup will be pretty significant for South Africa. And it would be smart for them to blood some new players next year, even though they might see that as a, even though they have players. If you take France, you know, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that, the average age of teams, Paul, you might have some stats, but the average age of the French team is 25. I mean, that's incredible for not just for this coming World Cup, but for next World Cup, and potentially some of those players will be able to play in the World Cup in, you know, 8 years' time, potentially, or a lot of them will.
10.
But 10 years' time. That'll be tough, but you never know. The average age means 25, so that means a good bunch of them are under 25. But yeah, it's that's one thing that I'd say is a concern. It's not a concern for this World Cup, but I would love to see some more fresh, BOC players that are coming through. I think just without our exposure to their Super Rugby, I'm not going to see them as much. But I know that a lot of their good players play in the non-URC Europe games, Europe teams anyway.
Yeah, I'm not, like I say, the only position I've got any concern about the Springboks is at 10. Ever else, they've got depth and they've got other guys coming through. So perfectly happy with that. France, Wales beat Australia 29-28. A couple of controversial calls in this one. So teams playing against Wales seem to always pick up red cards. That's 5 red cards now in 12 games for teams playing against Wales, which is a massive number, obviously.
It's incredible.
2 in the Six Nations. Argentina gave 1 up. Fiji did, and now Australia as well. And look, it was a red card, so no problems with the call there. But that must be some kind of record.
Australia are probably the team on the flip side that are getting the reds, because if I'm wrong, they've at least had 3 this season. Is that right? And they tend to have them early in the game.
Who's the same?
They had Australia tend to be the ones a team that continues to receive red cards, particularly at the beginning of the game. They obviously suffered 1 5 minutes into the French third game.
Yep, I remember that one. And they went on to win. Yeah,
and they did, which is amazing. This one, and I have.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm feeling there might have been another one, but it was later in the game, although I could be mistaken. I saw a lot of Australians blowing up about that red, and I think it is one, and I think even Australian fans will admit, that is a red. I think they're complaining about the fact that it's red, not the decision. They're complaining about the law. Australia continuously are tackling too high. And it just keeps getting them into trouble. And you can, you know, a lot of the reds, they're not like your traditional swinging arm to the head or shoulder charging, although Kurajani or whoever it was at the beginning of the year, it was that. This was a little bit unlucky, but it is dangerous. And so they just need to get lower. I think it's a real problem in that team.
Head clashes are a big problem. Therefore, the tackler has got to get down and get his head away from the other person's head. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Red all day long. No worries. Knock-ons. Yes, Curtly Beals was a yellow. Sorry. But if you're going to wave your hand around, for a long time now, if you're tackling and your hand gets into the passing line and you knock the ball on, it's a penalty. Right, so it's a penalty. Was he the last defender? Yes, he was. He stopped a clean break. Therefore, it's yellow. Was it a penalty try? No, they were covering defenders. Now, a lot of people say, "Oh, look, he was tackling. It was unlucky." Sorry, if you're going to put your hand in that in that passing lane as part of a tackle, then that's what happens. It's been called blown that way for a long time now. So no problem with the
yellow at all. I'm not in complete agreement with you on that one. I need to have another look at it, but I think in slow motion, his yes, it was swinging in potentially, and he was putting it out there. But in full speed, it's very difficult to both knock the ball, reach out and touch the ball, and also do a good tackle at the same time. I think in slow motion, it kind of looked like he clipped the ball and then came around and wrapped afterwards. I think it was a little bit nice one, Simon. I think it was a little bit tough, but you know, I do understand it was a bit marginal for me, but I thought it was on the tough side.
So as soon as if it's a penalty, it's a yellow. It's either nothing or a yellow card. It's nothing. It can't just be a penalty. So it's either or it has to be a scrum line or a yellow card.
The refs have said. I think Beauden Barrett got a penalty only against who was it? I'm not sure. It was a team recently, and it was deemed that it was, you know, unintentional or something like that.
That's fine. But the point here is he was the last defender, and there was a clean break on. So it's a yellow card for stopping the clean break. So it's either a yellow card or a scrum for an accidental knock-on. It's not there's nothing in between. It can't just be a penalty. The laws just don't allow that. Because the clean break is, he hasn't got the yellow card isn't for the deliberate knockdown. The yellow card is because he stopped the clean break on the outside.
Yeah, yeah. I think there is the ability for the ref to. And they do bring it in. They, you know, it doesn't have it in the law to take to give a little bit of the benefit of the doubt or whatever you want to call it, and say it's not clear that it was a intentional
anyway, we're moving
knockdown,
on.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. We're moving on. The Tompkins knockdown. Right then. So again, he knocks it down. Everyone stops and he runs in for a try because the referee says it goes backwards and. I know, 99 times out of 100, if you touch the ball in front of you like that, it goes forwards. But he got lucky. His palm was facing backwards. It was pushing it backwards. So he did go backwards, and yeah, that's fine. I've seen people on Twitter going, World Rugby, clarify, if it's knocked down but doesn't go forwards, is that allowed? Yes, it is allowed, as long as it doesn't go forwards.
And it did go back.
Now, Rini most times the referee will blow that up and just say, assume it went forwards. Yes, they got it. It's very rare the referee will call it that way, but he did.
And he was right. I think actually the thing here, which hopefully teams will learn from, is and probably the same with the previous week with Will Jordan, is the Australian players put their hands up and they could have grabbed him. It was very clear. They actually stopped playing. So there was Kirtley Beal and another fella. There was a guy who was well within his ability to actually tackle the guy. Instead, he called for the penalty rather than grabbing him. And I think that was actually what Australians should also be annoyed about, because when you saw the replays, unfortunately, I don't agree with Dave Rennie. I think they do. They're very unlucky, Australia, but it went back.
Yep, it did. And I'd say most times the referee will just call that or blow it straight away. But there you go. It is what it is. Wales got lucky in this one. Yeah, say their fifth red card. Seven wins, five of those including red cards. Well, there you go.
Australia are very good at playing with 14 men. Like they almost, you know, the game against France, the game against Wales, where they should have, you know, could have had that win, if not for a penalty after the death. You know, they're not bad with 14 players. Sometimes better than they are with 15 players, to be honest. It was their best game of the end of year tour.
Yep. Now look, as someone pointed out in the comments a while back, and I've lost it now because it scrolled past. There's too much, so much chat going on. Look, Australia are missing a whole bunch of players. Let's be honest, they aren't the same side that won the Rugby Championship. They've got a bunch of players in Japan who didn't travel, and they've got other players who are injured as well. So it's been a tough time for the Wallabies in that. When you're trying to say two players in Japan, but I'm pretty sure it's three.
No, second to the Rugby Championship, not one.
Second to the Rugby Championship. Sorry. Okay. They had a good Rugby Championship. You're quite right. Yeah, second to the
Rugby Championship. Very good Rugby Championship. Smoked the South Africa.
So things are in the right direction for them. Wales, we have to wait and see. Yes, they are Six Nations champions, but it was the Jam Slam. And yeah,
Jam Slam. Absolutely.
Coined by the Attacking Scrum podcast. I'm a fan of theirs. I do watch it, so that's good. Rushing through France, as we knew, bunch of young players on the way up. Great team. Looking forward to seeing them play in the future. We talked about the All Blacks at the beginning.
I didn't think they had it in them, to be honest, Paul. Just wanted to say, based on after about 10 minutes, I obviously did, but. You know, they didn't have convincing matches prior to the game against the All Blacks. You know, the game against Argentina was extremely tight, and Argentina have had a very difficult year. And the game against Georgia wasn't that convincing either. So, you know, France did step it up, and I think they, after seeing the highlights of those games, I thought we were going to give France. You know, I thought we were going to beat them. So, good on them for proving us wrong and showing how good they are coming up to their World Cup.
Yep. Ireland, wow, where has this come from? Their last two games, they have suddenly, things have clicked in this window for them. Now, look, they've got a new head coach in Farrell since the Rugby World Cup. He's not had much time with them because of COVID, blah, blah, blah. They didn't have a convincing Six Nations. Losing to France 13-15, losing to Wales 21-16.
Red card in that match.
So their Scotland game, 24-27, and then they come into, and they beat England 32-18, but they then come into this one. They beat Japan 60-5, New Zealand 29-20, and it should have been a lot more than that. They were way, that scoreline flatters the All Blacks. And then they beat Argentina 53-7. Wow. This team, suddenly they're humming. They are over-reliant on Sexton, unfortunately, for them. So Carberry needs some more time. And he did get to start against Argentina, to be fair. I still think they're a bit over reliant on Sexton. Carberry needs more time in there, but they're heading in the right direction. Argentina, well, geez, three wins, a draw, and eight losses. This is what happens when you don't have your team together much, and they're pulling in from everywhere.
Got to feel bad for them. They also play against very tough opposition. You know, they don't have, New Zealand and England and Ireland, you know, we all get a lot of big warm, a lot of warm-up games against the likes of Tonga and Fiji and Japan and the USA and Argentina tend to have to probably play to those other teams' schedules. Most of the games were top tier, you know, very tough. I should actually go back and have a look at all those 12 games, but I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't any games that were against opposition. I think maybe they played against Uruguay at some point.
They played Georgia at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
Romania at the beginning, not Georgia, before games, played Wales a couple of times. They had those games, obviously, in the Rugby Championship against South Africa, New Zealand and Australia. And then it's been France, Italy and Ireland to finish. So as you say, yeah, just that one game against tier two opposition.
Very difficult.
Being Romania. So look, it's been a tough season for them. But I think they'll be better in 2023 when they've got time ahead of the Rugby World Cup to be together. Just like we saw last year when they were together for 6 months ahead of the Rugby Championship, they played really well. This time when they're playing for their clubs, having to travel backwards and forwards to Europe, it's going to work a lot harder. So, yeah, I think they'll have a poor year next year, but before coming better come Rugby World Cup. That's international rugby. It's out of the way. It's done. It's dusted. End of the season. We can lay back, take the next 2 months off and wait for Super Rugby.
Oh, that's right.
Except we've already had Super Rugby news this week straight away with the announcement of the squads. Did you get to have a look at the squads?
Only a little bit, actually, Paul. It was part of my homework before tonight that I didn't get to because I was cooking dinner. But I did, we've obviously been looking at Moana Pacifica throughout the last few months, which has been really cool to see their team form. And I paid a little bit of attention to the Crusaders team as well. I do this thing where I get to the end of Super Rugby and it finishes and I think I'm not going to be looking forward to Super Rugby for a while. And that's because, you know, you're pumped up for international rugby. And then also when we're in the autumn internationals, I'm kind of thinking, oh, Super Rugby can't top this. But then, you know, you start to, earlier than I, because perhaps when I was first, not first getting into rugby, but when I was probably first really getting into Super Rugby, I probably didn't pay attention to anything until the kickoff of the first game. But given the way that the competition is a bit more competitive and more interesting at the outset, I'm really looking forward to this year's Super Rugby, I have to say.
Yeah, so I was on SENZ last night for 45 minutes on Ricardo's show there, Something Extra Time, I think it's called. And you can catch the podcast on that one. I retweeted it. So go on, look at Driving Maul if you want to go listen to my 45-minute chat with Ricardo, going through all the five squads plus somebody from the Rugby Mag guy. So I don't know. Anyway, clearly my comments are much better than his, let's be honest. So go listen to that because obviously we haven't got time tonight to go through them in detail. But you've got to say again that the Crusaders, a stacked team, their main problem, I think, is going to be number 10, number 10 jersey with Richard Mwanga expecting to take 6 weeks off.
6 weeks, is it, Paul? Okay.
Something like that at the beginning of the season. Now, he'll be back for the pointy end. And let's be honest, all these New Zealand teams are going to make the top eight. So does the regular season really matter? Yes, if you want home field advantage. No, if you just want to make the finals. So from that point of view, you got to say that's a bit of a problem there. Jack Goodhue could potentially miss the first 11 rounds, I've been reading. So again, midfield problems potentially for the Crusaders like they had last year. Last year, they didn't have any recognised midfielders, basically. Everyone was an outside back. They had Havili being a fullback, and then you had Fanganuku, who's obviously a winger by trade. Admittedly, Razor didn't appreciate me asking that question in the post-match interview and reckoned that Fergus Burke or someone was a decent one. It's like, really? Okay. If you think so, Razor. Also prop perhaps don't have the depth that they used to have. It's been a very different off-season for the Crusaders. Normally they have about four new players. Now they've got like nine, I think it is, this year. and of which three or four of them are from outside the catchment area of Canterbury and Tasman. So again, that's unheard of. Triple T coming in, an interesting one there.
Yep.
And the
Pablo Matera as well. Very interesting.
Matera, yes, always good to go and get yourself a racist from overseas. Good finding there.
So do you think that he is going to come in as a, is he coming in, you know, almost like a sabbatical for him to sort of learn the trade, or is he going to be a starting player or at least, you know, spend a lot of time? Is he going to play every game, provided his fitness?
It's going to come down to combination, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah.
I don't know how good his English is. Being a captain,
he's the only Argentinian player playing in New Zealand, although he's probably one of the better Argentinian players. It's just quite surprising that he's actually made it here. So, yeah.
Oh, look, it's very rare. I mean, obviously, we had Hemipo down with the Highlanders. So, it's not totally from nowhere, but it is definitely a rare signing. But and I think a good move from him to come and test himself over here, to be honest, from a playing point of view.
That's what I mean. Is it more for him than it is for
I would have thought so.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, as Ochtona Wright says, he is a world class player. It's going to come down to combinations. They won't throw him in straight away, but he'll play his way in, I'd guess. I would have thought so.
Yep.
Simon's saying, funny that Triple T played for two Mitre 10 Cup teams this year. Yes, it was, wasn't it? Waikato ended up having two injuries and basically had no. Only had one nine left, so they had to find themselves a nine who could sub in. As basically Waikato being locked down, none of the players, they couldn't get one from their own area because basically no one had been outside their house, and hence they got someone from Bay of Plenty, where they had been camping out there. So yeah, it's a strange one, but yeah, well done to him for getting a winner's medal by just playing one game for Waikato in the final.
Absolutely.
So that's the Crusaders. Oh, they're going to be there or thereabouts, aren't they? Looking at the Chiefs then, obviously Josh Iwani coming in, we'll add a bit of a spark at 10. Losing Damon McKenzie to Japan for a season. So can Caleb Trask or Chase Tiatia really make it up from fullback to cover the loss of DMAC? There's got to be a question. Apart from that, look, decent number of players all over the pitch, and they got three players with the All Blacks currently, in Josh Lord, Tupou Vaiea, and Brodie Retallick. Sorry, three locks with the
All Blacks. True.
Only five changes from last year makes them the most settled side in Super Rugby. I did ask Clayton if that meant they got a head start on everyone else. And he said, actually, it's a swings and roundabouts because having so many players away with the All Blacks means that they're not going to have those players until really the last minute before the season kicks off. So, yes and no. Yes, it's good because they're balanced, but no, because some of the players are going to come back late. And the other question I asked him was, look, last year the Chiefs had nine injury replacements, which is... So about a third of your team, about 25 to 30% of the players we will be watching in Super Rugby haven't been named yet. So I asked him, with Moana Pacifica obviously hoovering up a bunch of NPC talent, is it harder? Is that going to be harder to replace players? And he said, "Yep, you're going to have your pipelines ready, but not just Moana Pacifica, but Major League Rugby in the USA is hoovering up a lot of players. So it's becoming a bit of an issue that." Is that the depth for some of these teams is potentially an issue this year and going forward. So if you think that Japan and France and England, they attract players who are basically Super Rugby quality. So your players like Ruru, who's going to France. You've got obviously Lamapi and Arso leaving the Hurricanes to go overseas. Whereas Major League Rugby is taking those established NPC players who aren't quite good enough for Super Rugby. So that it's a different catchment market of players that they're losing to that. I said last night the Chiefs would win. Ricardo said the Crusaders would win. and the other guy said the Blues would win. So I can't remember as open a Super Rugby competition as this one coming up. I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I think a lot of people didn't back the Chiefs last year. I thought they were a bit of a dark horse, and they did, you know, had a great season. As a Canterbury local and Crusaders fan, I wouldn't think it is the worst thing in the world for them not to win this comp. In fact, it, you know, I think I am a fan of teams, you know, when we lost against England in the 2019 semi-final, I actually said to my brother, I might have even said this on the podcast before, you know, this is a good thing for World Rugby, and it's probably a good thing for the All Blacks. Right now, it doesn't feel like that was the right thing for the All Blacks' point of view, but I think the Crusaders being on top does take away a little bit of the, you know, the fun from other teams. Now, I know that the Crusaders didn't win the Trans-Tasman last year, but it was a bit of an unusual competition. You know, the Blues or the Chiefs or any of the other teams winning probably is good for the for keeping the comp interesting.
Yeah, looking at the Blues, again, decent team with one hole at the moment, as far as I can see in their squad, which is number 12. But that has a big RTS player to fill that gap. Going to be interesting.
They've got an incredible team, don't they?
Oh, it's a cracking team. They're going to miss Patrick Tuipulotu, but they've brought in Luke Romano to replace that experience. Now, that's going to be an interesting one because I mean, Luke Romano's going to play a lot more minutes than he's used to over the last few years. He's been playing off the bench for the Crusaders. He ain't going to be playing off the bench for the Blues.
That's right.
So we'll see if his body can hold up to that. RTS at 10 will be interesting between, obviously, Bowden Barrett and Rico Iwani. So look, he's got All Blacks outside, inside and outside him. But yeah, looking at the talent they've got in their back three, I can't see him starting on the wing with players like Talia, Caleb Clark.
They've got great wingers
hanging around. So, but they don't have anybody who plays 12 apart from the other Talia, who basically is a big battering ram and isn't much. So that's the Blues, really. Then we head down south and then we head down to the other two teams that are going to be basically the also-rans, I'm afraid. The Hurricanes, look, lots of changes there, so it's going to take a while for them to gel. They might have sorted out their engine room, but age, might we'll have to see about that one. Their big problems, those in the halfbacks. TJ's back, which is good, but Jamie Booth still hasn't played a game of rugby. He played a couple of club games this year, and that's it. Didn't play any NPC. So we're going to have to see how he comes back. And they've got rid of Tarame, who's gone to the Marlin Pacifica. So, yeah, it's going to be... And they don't really have... Well, they've got a Garden Bashup, number 10, or Ruben Love, who's a 15. So some big question marks around the Hurricanes, I think, next year. And then finally, the Highlanders, which look good until... half the team is injured. Oh, and also Owen Frank's injured, the big signing for the Hurricanes. He's out already for the season. And then finally, the Highlanders, Perry Harry Parkinson injured, Billy Harmon also injured already. Will they have 15 men still standing come the season? So hence that's one a bit down on the Highlanders. But look, they'll play above the names on this team sheet as they always do.
Yeah.
But I just can't see those two teams challenging the other three, to be honest.
So you said earlier, the Canes have, they've brought in a lot of, you know, ex All Blacks, or at least a few from Europe, which is really cool. Hopefully that boosts them a bit. What was I going to say? You said that all top five teams, the New Zealand teams were going to make this the semi-finals of the
quarterfinals,
the Super Rugby Pacifica, all of them, right?
Quarterfinals, yes.
Quarterfinals, sorry, excuse me. Course, yes. Yep. Kind of two things at once, Paul. So, if there was a team that was going to miss out, which team do you think it'd be?
It's going to be one of those ones beginning with H, definitely. And it comes down to injuries, to be honest with you. I think, and also, can Bryn Evans still play at 37? Hey, look, he proved us all wrong this year, but he's going to have to try and do it again. So I'm a bit worried for, because I think Selby Ricketts also injured as well, isn't he? Is that right? For the Highlanders. So the engine room's a problem for the Highlanders. You look at the Hurricanes. Oh, sorry, no. Selby Ricketts fine. Walker Leary's the one that's injured for the Hurricanes. You look at the Hurricanes. The question is how long they're going to gel. And if they lose a halfback, they're in trouble. If they lose TJ, they're gone. Aidan Morgan, really? Do you want him running your team? It comes down to injuries between those two as to who might not make it. Just very briefly on Moana Pacifica, they just don't have an engine room. They've got no locks, I'm afraid, folks. So that's their real big area of weakness, and they've got no one with Super Rugby experience at all in those locks, unfortunately.
Yeah, they are. You know, we have to be. I really hope the New Zealand public has, gives them credit. You know, when they deserve getting on the field with a decent team. Knowing that they, a lot of the players that they have to wait out some contracts, and they need a bit more time to build the team that they probably ought to. This is no disrespect to them, but in some ways it will be a bit of an interim, starter team for them. And, they'll have a much better team, I'd say, in 2 years' time, 2 seasons' time.
Yeah, look. Both Moana Pacifica and the Fiji Indra struggled because it took so long to get their contracts confirmed, right?
Yeah.
They both missed out on players because of that. Now, look,
maybe Moana Pacifica
had got a good squad, but the problem is just the locking department. They're just short, I'm afraid. Something that I forgot to mention on the international front is having a quick look forward to next year. This apparently is the tours that are happening in the July window. Scotland are off to Japan for three. Sorry, Scotland are off to Argentina for three tests. England will play Fiji, followed by Australia for three tests. Ireland are over here in New Zealand for three tests, which is looking really spicy now.
It's a great one. Yeah.
Wales head down to South Africa for three tests. France against Japan for three tests. A three-test series in Japan.
It's excellent.
We'll see a similar squad as that toured Australia. So missing players from the that make the final of the top 14, at least that first test, if not all three of them.
Paul, am I right? I think the schedule for the top 14 was pushed a little bit for COVID, so there was an overlap that there was not, wouldn't usually be in some of those players. I could be wrong about that, but I understood that some of the unavailability was COVID caused.
Yeah, but I think it was COVID more because it was caused by how long they had to quarantine rather than because the games actually overlapped. The top 14 quite often finishes the week before the first
test. Yeah, okay, so,
and they quite often
so depending on what's happening, they might be able to put in their best team if they wanted to, but as you say, they might not need to.
And then finally, Italy go to Canada, the USA, and Argentina. That's because the Scotland starts their test series starts a week earlier than everyone else on the 2nd of July, which is so that they'll have finished their three tests before allowing Italy to have one test against Argentina at the end there. So there you go, folks. That's what I've seen. It's not an official channel, but hey, it's out there, so we'll throw it. Who doesn't like a good rumor?
Yeah, that will be. I'm looking forward to them. And the Six Nations, that'll be cracking starting the 5th of February. I think it was a little bit later this year. I'm really looking forward to the Six Nations, it'll be great.
Now, Simon is suggesting that Italy are going to Georgia and Romania instead of Canada and the USA. So it looks like we've got that one wrong. But look, great games for Georgia and Romania. It looks like, the USA and Canada missing out and having a bit of a problem. Yeah, that Canada especially, but is falling behind big time. So we'll have to, and the USA, therefore, is running out of people to play, which is a big problem for them, just as they're getting their Major League Rugby and heading in the right direction.
That's right.
Nocturnal rights then. So Stuart Hogg broke a very old record dating back to the 1920s. Well, there we go. Nocturnal rights, let us know what that is. I missed that.
Yeah, you have to let us know. You might want to be quick.
Yeah, because I'm about to wrap up, folks.
One thing, Paul, I wanted to ask you, I guess, there's probably going to be in the coming Driving Mall. Do you do the Driving Mall every week? Is it a weekly thing? Do you do it, Christmas, or do you take a bit of a hiatus?
No, we will continue all the way through. As my daughters are with my my ex-wife this Christmas, I'll be having Christmas on my own, obviously, as my parents are locked out of the country. So I've got no problems with broadcasting on Christmas Day, folks, if anyone fancies listening.
I think Christmas is on a Saturday, so you might get it. You might be lucky.
Oh, yeah. What? It is. You're quite right. So I don't actually have to do it on Christmas Day itself. But absolutely, yeah, we'll be, the 28th of December and the 21st of December, and then also the 4th. So even got time to recover from New Year's Eve hangover. So
that's good. I think based on some of the comments, I think a few people were keen to sort of dig into, how almost post-mortem the All Blacks playing style season, that kind of thing in detail. And I guess there'll be a bit of time for that in the coming weeks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've got a few weeks of that because the URC is on Spark Sports, not on Sky, so I can't watch that. And that's the only rugby we've got basically I got some Premiership and Top 14 action as well. So, look, there'll be plenty of things to discuss. And yes, should Razor Robinson replace Ian Foster? That's definitely one for a future week. Clearly, probably everyone is discussing that at the moment. But hey, we'll let we'll let it ruminate marinate for a week or two before cooking that one. It's good to see Con in his Barbarians jersey ready for this weekend's game as the Barbarians men take on Samoa and the Barbarians women take on South Africa. So two Barbarians games this weekend, folks.
Samoa 15, unfortunately, which is a bit disappointing, yes. But it's basically Samoa, isn't it? Well, it's
European-based players, I think.
That's right.
Essentially. So, folks, have a great... we'll catch you all next Tuesday for the Driving Mall Show. And if anyone's looking for a Christmas present for their kids who like to play with toy horses, then check out my Twitter feed because there's some cracking wooden stables available for sale at the moment if you're looking for that Christmas present. Thank you, Con. Thank you, everyone in the live chat. Catch you all next Tuesday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.